Good morning. This is Commissioner Wirth calling to order the meeting of the Bay Area Toll Authority Oversight Committee for Wednesday, May 13th, 2015. I'd like to welcome everyone here. If we look forward to, well, and welcome public comment. If you have any comments you'd like to make, please. The blue cards or speaker cards are on the table next to the window, along with all the materials that are supporting the agenda items for today's meeting. This meeting is also broadcast live on the MTC webcam, and materials for this meeting are also all available online. So welcome, and I'd like to first confirm that we have a quorum.
We have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Next item is there the consent calendar. Is there anyone who would like to remove anything from the consent calendar? If not, then may I please have a motion for approval?
So moved.
Moved by Commissioner Tissier.
Second.
Seconded by Commissioner Baker. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposition? That motion carries unanimously. Next item, we'll move on to the BATA Resolution Number 113 Revised Fiscal Year 2014-15 Capital Budget Amendment. And as you know, this is for our current budget, not the future budget that we just talked about. So, Peter, I'll turn it over to you, please.
Yes. excuse me. Good morning, Commissioners. Peter Lee with BATA staff. Staff's here today to request an amendment to the BATA Capital Toll Bridge Rehabilitation Program to update some allocations we had for a number of projects over the year. There is no net change to the overall budget of the program. We're just moving some project savings into projects that have some slight overruns and some new projects that came along during the year that were on an emergency basis. So we had some bid savings on some jobs, and we had some new work come up that were emergency orders.
Great.
And staff's here to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Peter. Are there any questions? I have no speaker cards. Then, if not, may I please have a motion to adopt BATA Resolution Number 113 Revised?
Mm-hmm.
Moved by Commissioner Bates, seconded by Commissioner Campos. Thank you. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? That motion carries unanimously. Moving on to our next item 4, we have a contract change order for Fast Track, the Regional Customer Service Center, Express Lanes, Operations Services, Xerox, State and Local Solutions Incorporated in the amount of $4,585,000. And I'd like to turn to Carol Kirster for her presentation. Thank you.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm here to request a change order to our contract with Xerox to deliver operational services for Express Lanes. But before I get into the item itself, I did want to share some relatively good news that's presented in Attachment A. The good news is that Xerox, after months of struggling, has been meeting call answering standards for the last 3 months and is on track to meet those standards again this month. That's good news because, as you recall, we upgraded our back-end system in November of last year, and while we did anticipate some transition challenges, the customer service impacts were worse than what we had hoped. And they went on for 4 months, taking a little longer than we'd hoped as well. We did assess more than $840,000 in penalties over those months for not meeting standards. Now performance is getting to where it needs to be, which is important because we're adding new functionality to support the deployment of express lanes. As you know, the Alameda CTC will open a new express lane on 580 between Dublin and Livermore this fall. And BAFA will open a new express lane on 680 between Walnut Creek and San Ramon next year. All of the express lanes will collect tolls from non-carpool vehicles via fast-track toll tags, and these facilities will also have violation enforcement systems that use cameras much like we do on the bridges. The Customer Service Center will be responsible for express lane support services that include issuing new switchable toll tags that allow drivers to declare occupancy. The Service Center will also charge express lane trips to fast-track accounts. We'll handle call answering, payment processing, settling revenues to appropriate agencies, and handling customer disputes and processing violations. So in January, we were here, and this committee authorized a change order with Xerox for back-end development work, which needed to get started in order to meet ACTC's time frame. That work is underway and on schedule. This change order would authorize funding for 4 years of operational services for a cost of just under $4.6 million. I should point out there's a modest contingency included here, And that really allows us to prepare for higher call volumes or tag requests without paying for the worst-case scenario up front. The cost of this work will be passed through to BAFA and Alameda CTC through separate co-op agreements. Alameda CTC will likely bear a slightly higher share of the transaction costs, which is the bulk of the work here, because we estimate that because they will be opening first. We expect the slightly higher share will be like 55%, so not significantly higher, but a bit higher. With that, I'd be happy to take any questions, and I recommend you authorize this change order with Xerox in an amount not to exceed $4,585,000 for a four-year period through November 2019. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Carol. Are there any questions? Yes, Commissioner Pierce?
Yeah. I wish I had seen the news a day or so earlier. I would have asked you offline. But last night, Channel 7 ran a very scathing article on 7 on Your Side about Fast Track. And while they acknowledged that, yes, we're meeting our call targets in time, the action behind them is zero. And they are saying that Xerox is paying the staff additional compensation to meet their 3-minute timing on the call responses and to deal with the customers, but unfortunately the customers are not getting service. They're just getting shoved aside and they're not allowed to talk to supervisors. And there were some pretty harsh accusations made, and I think we have a responsibility to make sure that the people are being serviced and not just stonewalled, because they're apparently getting hundreds of phone calls to 7 on Your Side about this. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to look at it and see if we're, you know, meeting the call timing is not the goal. Meeting the services of our customers is the goal. So I'm very concerned that as we throw more money at Xerox, that they're just going to do what they've been doing, and that's stonewall our customers.
Well, we definitely share your concerns, Commissioner Pierce, and we do work very closely with Xerox to make sure that we're balancing cost effectiveness with a level of customer service that is appropriate. You're right. There were not one but two news stories this week. I think we're seeing the impact of folks who had toll violations escalate and saw impacts on their tax statements. These are not uncommon news stories, however. I'm not in any way condoning the fact that there are unhappy customers out there that could be getting better service from Xerox. And in fact, we work with them on a daily basis. Most of the transactions that we process are quite routine. Something like 99.9% mm-hmm. of the transactions okay. are problem-free. But there is there's a very small percentage of folks who are billed when they shouldn't be, or who incur violations without their knowledge and face a very unhappy surprise. I will say there's also a fair amount of user error involved from time to time. There are folks who know they're crossing bridges and aren't paying their tolls, and they're incurring violations, and those are escalating. Our goal is always just to collect the toll. We always offer an opportunity for folks to open an account and have those violations waived. Many times there's the hope that there's going to be an interesting news story there, and I think when we talk to reporters and work with them, what they realize is that, by and large, the system is working as it needs to be. I agree. We do need to work with Xerox, particularly on handling escalated, more complicated mm-hmm. complaints. And I'm happy to report that we're actually in the process right now of hiring a second staff person here. We have one already. But a second staff person that's within our control, who can not only go over to Xerox and work with them directly and coach them to be doing a better job, but who also personally intervenes to take on the very worst cases and get them to resolution.
Great. Thank you, Carol, for that explanation. And I wanted to know if there are any other questions. I have no public comment cards here. So with that, may I please entertain a motion to approve the staff recommendation? Moved by Commissioner Bates, seconded by Commissioner Sperring. No, you're not on the committee. That's right. Okay. May I please have a second? Thank you. Seconded by Commissioner Wiener. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? That motion carries unanimously. Thank you again, Carol, and thank you again for your great work as we support our traveling public. Next item, we have an update on the Toll Bridge Seismic Retrofit Program. And I'd like to turn to our Deputy Executive Director, Andy Vermeer, for that presentation. Thank you.
Good morning, Commissioners. Andrew Vermeer, Deputy Executive Director. I'm going to be extremely brief, but I thought it'd be important to mention the results of the Toll Bridge Seismic Program Oversight Committee meeting that we had Monday, which really parallels the two items that are presented in your package that was posted last week. In short, the Toll Bridge Oversight Committee took action on Monday to really organize an effort to provide a complete test program to sort of supplement the work that has been done in the past on the rest of the bolts, to really organize and follow a similar path to conclusion. There was an article written relative to the meeting, and so I thought it was important to maybe just talk about a couple of those items that were brought forward, because we certainly did talk about them quite a bit on Monday. In short, Caltrans did do some ultrasonic testing as directed by the Oversight Committee a little while ago, and that determined that one rod was measured short. So the plan then was to pull on that rod and see how it performed. The bottom line, it did not perform in terms of holding its load, but I think it's important to recognize that it's premature to say that it's actually broken or that corrosion played a part in that. But because it didn't hold the load, it created a couple other paths for us to follow. One is to put a load test on all the remaining rods that are accessible, and they are currently doing that with the contractor American Bridge Floor. As of yesterday, they had pulled on about 130 of the 400-plus rods, and they all performed as expected under a load that simulates the load that they're expected to see in seismic. Remember, they're all currently carrying sort of a basic load, but they get a small bump in load if there is seismic activity. And so that will continue on for the next couple of weeks. In addition, the Oversight Committee ordered the department to extract the rod that was not holding the load, and we want to do that as carefully as possible, because what's important is to see what it looks like at the bottom threads, where we had seen problems on the E2 rod. That will tell us definitively what was the reason for it not holding the load, whether or not it was just a nut that was not engaged properly, a strip thread as we had seen in a previous extracted rod, or if we can learn some more information about it potentially having broken, which we will find out. That is also expected to take about a month. The other thing that we had worked on was to complete the testing that resulted in finding some high chloride levels compared to earlier testing in some of the holes. And so the Oversight Committee had directed previously that the department go and look at more holes. There's about 100 holes that do have some form of water in them. And they're currently in the process of trying to determine whether or not there's a consistency of chlorides that is showing up. This is a particular problem relative to really not quite understanding what is causing that. And so there's got to be a considerable bit more thought put into trying to figure out what might be doing that. But I will say that it does appear to be limited, and there's probably a few details that we need to explore further and then report back on what we think is happening there. Again, that work will continue over the next couple of months, I'm sure. The third item, which is really closing down my opening statement, and that is that we've asked Dr. Brian Maroney to put together a comprehensive plan that will go through a series, a battery of tests on what will now be the three rods that are extracted, to try to really determine what is the condition of the rods and what we think might be going on with that. There is a requirement that in June he comes back with a full cost, scope, and schedule of what that plan might be, and so we do expect to be back here reporting more thoroughly on the results of that as they continue to test the rods through the summer. The second item that we talked about had to do with the demolition projects, and the demolition actually is going real well on site. So for those that have driven the bridge recently, you might notice that the cantilever sections are almost entirely gone, and in fact on the island, we're in the process of removing one of the big concrete piers that was part of the impact of finishing the bike path. And the bike path is being completed, as well as the ramps. They've formed and poured what we call the superstructure, and the next is the deck that gets poured on top. So we're seeing quite a bit of progress on the completion of the bike and the eastbound on-ramp, and so that is progressing. As we reported previously, the demolition of the rest of the steel structures, the bids came in, the contract has been awarded, bids came in favorably, and so that work is underway with the same contractor that is removing the cantilever. One smaller contract, which is sort of taking a look at a new way to remove the marine foundations, the final project is underway with Kiewit as the contractor. We're hoping that that result is positive in helping us figure out how to remove the rest of the marine footings in a cost-effective manner. Because the final thing that I would like to mention, and we'll have more information on this too as time comes out, but we are seeing quite a bit of pressure in the two areas that we have talked about previously in terms of the cost of removing the rest of the marine foundations and the capital support in order to complete the project. So we are charged with trying to continue to work on risk management strategies that minimize those costs, and we'll certainly be reporting back on a regular basis as to whether or not we're successful in sort of capping some of those pressures that we're seeing. So I'd be happy to answer any questions if you
Great.
Have any.
Andy, thank you very much for that update. I'd like to turn first to Commissioner Campos and then Commissioner Baker, looking around.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation. One of the things that I had a question about was it was reported in the Chronicle today that Caltrans comments about the rods were something along the lines of it seems like they're not that important or that it was sort of an odd statement. I think it says preliminary computer modeling shows that even if all of the tower seismic and other anchor rods didn't exist, as is the case on most other major bridges worldwide, it would only rise less than an inch and there would be no safety issue during or after a major seismic event. I'm trying to understand what that means.
You know, I think that's probably not a very good way to answer the question because I do think that they're important and they're certainly necessary as part of the seismic analysis goes forward. But I think the point that Dr. Maroney is trying to make is that they perform a very limited function, and they perform that function in a seismic earthquake, but that the loads that the bridge sees today with the weight of the bridge and all of the loads that transfer through the cable really take care of most of the necessary business. But I would argue that we do think those rods are important, and we want to make sure that they're performing well.
Well, the question that I have was, if they're not that important, why are we spending so much money and so much time looking at them? That doesn't make sense to me, and I think it's sort of a mixed message that's being sent.
I would agree. There has been talk in a lot of the problems that we've had explored that there's quite a bit of redundancy in the bridge, and I think that is a true statement, but that is true of all public works projects. When you get into a lifeline strategy, as this bridge is, you're sort of beyond what the code requirements say, so I know there's even additional redundancy at that point. We should not be investing in a lot of public infrastructure that's not necessary.
The problem is that, redundancy usually translates to a lot of money, and in this case, there are additional costs. So one question that I have is, who is liable for the millions extra that are being spent, and can we ask Caltrans to pay for that?
Commissioner, I think there's two questions there. Let me talk about the redundancy first. Redundancy on this structure, which is designated as a lifeline bridge, meaning not only does it survive the earthquake with no loss of life, but any damage that it suffers can be quickly repaired so that it's back in service in days, not weeks, not months, not years. That requires a level of redundancy, and the reason we have that redundancy is because we don't know exactly how the earthquake's going to happen, and we don't know exactly how the bridge is going to move. We think we do, but every time there's a new earthquake, we learn new things about how they perform. And so the idea with redundancy is to guard against what you don't know. I think the reason that you're justifiably concerned and confused about the response that you read in the paper is you don't spend that redundancy in the construction phase saying, gee, we got it good enough, so there's redundancy, let's stop. We want that full measure of redundancy for the earthquake, and we paid for that, and we intend to get it. Now, in terms of culpability, as we've discussed with you previously, we had failures on the East Pier, and we intend to see that the parties responsible for those failures are accountable for it, and we're not done with that story yet. If we turn out to have failures in the base of the tower, we will have the same expectation that those accountable compensate us for those failures. But we're not there yet with the tower foundation. That's why, as Andy indicated, we've got a lot of work and testing to do. And at this point, we do not have anything like the situation we had in the East Pier, where shortly after tensioning, dozens of rods failed. There is nothing like that visible at this location, and we don't expect to find it based upon all the testing we have done to date. But the presence of bay water, which is what it appears to be, and the fact that one rod didn't hold its load are worrisome developments, and we're going to track them down until we get to the bottom of it.
Well, I appreciate that, Steve. I guess, you know, from my perspective, something obviously went wrong here, and I think that to the extent that we have responsibility in that, I think that we have to acknowledge that. But to the extent that there is responsibility elsewhere, I think that we have an obligation to hold whoever is responsible accountable. And so do you have a sense of sort of when we'll know sort of our assessment of what happened here and where the responsibility lies?
Well, again, I think there are two cases we have to deal with. The one case is, I think, fairly certain now, and that's the East Pier. That work, the work to fix the broken bolts there is done. It cost a certain amount, and we are in the process of trying to assign responsibility and recover those funds. And that could be something that we will be able to bring back to you in the next several months. With the Tower Foundation, we don't know that we have something to be compensated for yet. But if we determine that we do, we'll have to go through a similar process. The difficulty with the Tower Foundation is the folks who built the East Pier are still on the job, American Bridge Floor. They're still under contract. The folks who built the Tower Foundation are gone. And so the difficulty of recovering damages from them is far greater as a result. Now, the designer of the tower is still here under contract, and Caltrans is still here. They're not going anywhere. But the Tower Foundation, if we do have to proceed down that path, is complicated by the fact that the contractor has performed the work and is out of town.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Commissioner Baker and then Commissioner Weiner.
Yeah, I heard you say that the rods you have tested, and there was the one that failed, and there was, you tested, I think, 130 more, and those performed as expected under additional loads, above and beyond their daily loads, the additional loads expected by seismic activity. What level of seismic activity do you test? And I know that's a little bit of a difficult question, because you get side to side and up and down and all the different things that happen in earthquakes, but can you just give me an idea of what we're testing for?
Sure. It's actually a very simple test. All it does is it pulls on it. So the way that these rods work is you put them in tension in the first place, and so they pull on them and then tighten the nut, and it connects them in such a way that they hold their normal loads. That in simple terms, is about 40% of its capacity. In other words, if you went to 100%, you would break it. So 40% is what its normal loads is. The anticipation, and if you think about it, in an earthquake, the tower rocks, and actually some rods will end up in compression, and which means they have less load, and some will be in tension. And so the seismic load that we're pulling them to is about 55% of seismic. So there's a small increase into where they were. I think it's actually about 48 to 55% of their ultimate capacity. So there's actually just a small, short burst of additional load that they see during an earthquake load during those motions. But that's what we replicated, was the design assumptions for what each rod would see in those conditions.
Yeah, I guess maybe I'm missing it, but in which conditions? Are we imagining a certain size of earthquake or a certain strength of earthquake or a certain depth of earthquake?
Sure. Well, the calculations that get you to the 55% are based on the maximum credible earthquake, is the way we sort of talked about it. And so it survives the lifeline analysis under those loading conditions that are represented by 55%. So it's maximum credible is the simplest way to look at it to get the lifeline standards.
Great. Commissioner Weiner.
Thank you. I just want to reiterate what Commissioner Campos said about responsibility. And I know that for the contractors that, you know, they will be fully pursued in terms of that responsibility. Mm-hmm. But in terms of Caltrans as well, I just don't want to have a situation where we're just assuming that the toll payers on the Bay Bridge are going to be paying for everything that the contractors aren't responsible for. Caltrans had a huge role in the project management and decisions around the design and build of this construction of this bridge. And I think Caltrans has to be a full partner in terms of any fixes that we need to pay for. And I will say I'm always frustrated with Caltrans in many, many different areas of the world and different projects and having nothing to do with the MTC or the Bay Bridge. But this is another situation where both in terms of the project itself, but sometimes Caltrans's response is just extremely frustrating.
You know, Commissioner, if I could just say one thing, because I think we absolutely agree with it. One of the reasons why we're recommending being so methodical is there are very complicated contracts, and there's a very specific construction sequence that happened, and a lot of change orders were written. And our advice is to not jump to a conclusion until we go through that analysis, and we're certainly prepared to do that. But there are a lot of things that have been done under contract terms that were part of the design, and we want to make sure that the responsibility is pointed in the right place.
Thank you. Commissioner Bates and then Commissioner Sperring.
So, Andy, you say a maximum critical event. What is that? What is that on the – I mean, is that
– In layman's terms, it's the big one.
No, I understand that. Is that eight? Is that eight on what is
it? It could very well be. It's a very complicated way they design these bridges. It's essentially a 1-in-1,000-year flood. Mm-hmm. And so they went through endless amounts of simulations and came up with the maximum. They actually don't even use that. They use a simulated earthquake scenario, but it's a very large earthquake.
So will it withstand the new movie that's coming out, San Andreas?
That's why we have all this redundancy and why we want to keep it.
Keep it. Okay, great. Thank you. Commissioner Sperring?
Andy, there was an article about an outrageous amount of money testing the water, whether it's salt water or not. Can you explain a little bit why that's costing so much and what are they doing for that?
Sure. You know, a lot of times the Oversight Committee gets presented something on a very quick timeline, and so I'm not sure there was a lot of calculation and backup for what was brought forward as the $440,000 testing. But it was really meant to accomplish a couple of things. One was to test all of the holes that do show signs of water, which I mentioned are roughly 100, 110 holes, to not only determine what the content of the water is in a chemical analysis, but to go and do some regular monitoring of the volume of water in the holes. So that if we are seeing some sort of a cross-communication, which we haven't, you know, proven yet, where there's some influx of bay water into some of these holes, then we would see some fluctuation. And so the idea is to go back several times and not only monitor the location or the depth of the water, but also do the initial tests and try to validate some of the preliminary tests that were done on about seven holes, which is what was the first report information. So, you know, it does sound like a lot of money. I'm hopeful that we don't spend that kind of money on just the testing alone. But if you think about the access to each of these locations, it's not easy access. So you have marine access, you're on a barge, you climb up into the tower. The legs are all separate. There's four legs. Each of the holes is in a compacted area. So it's not exactly cheap to do the measurements. But we are hopeful that what we have got in the numbers that we're talking about and the ones that have been reported in the paper, that we're at not to exceed numbers to get all the information that we need.
And who's paying for testing? Like, I mean, how is that allocated? Who's responsible for that?
Right now, in order to get the work done, we're using the seismic program to fund that. As Steve mentioned, we have been talking very seriously with what we think are all the parties involved in the E2 failure to get them to reimburse for the costs that we've expended. But in order to get to the solution, we're moving forward with paying it out of the seismic program budget.
Great. Well, thank you. Thank you very much for that update. And I just wanted to concur with your recommendation that we conduct this comprehensive review of these issues so that when it can come back, as we did on the Eastern Pier, I think it was very helpful to the commission as well as to the public to really understand what the problem was, what the causes were, what the solution was, and then, as you mentioned, working towards who ultimately is responsible for that. So I think that the comprehensive approach will be very important to understanding completely where, you know, what the issues are and how to go about addressing them. So thank you very much for keeping us and the public informed, and look forward to coming back at our next meeting and hearing as we move through this interim step. So thank you. With that, thank you also to the commissioners for your questions. I think it helps the public get a sense of where we're heading directly from our staff. Moving on to our next item, public comment. I have no speaker cards. Therefore, we will adjourn the meeting to our next meeting of the BATA Oversight Committee, which will be on Wednesday, June 10th. Thank you very much.